Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What makes you tune in?
I like the people. They're very exciting and brave and handsome.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 393, for the week of February 7th, 2022.
Yeah!
I am trustworthy looking money manager David T. Cole, and I'm here with juicy beheading Sarah D. Bunting.
In Soviet Russia, mirror black and you, okay?
And Zach Whittier's fan club president.
Of course I know him. I've read every interview he's ever done.
You'll hear that. You'll hear that little slip by Tara at the end.
So unprofessional. Wow, the way I wasted everyone's time. Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week.
Oh, boy.
We are doing a little bit of a departure episode, especially if you're new. As some of you know, one person who did not know was David T. Cole. It is the Olympics right now, which means that most of the other networks are not trying very hard to counter-program what is probably going to be a ratings juggernaut or whatever passes for one in our current day. So because we couldn't find a premiere that we were all especially excited to talk about, instead, we looked to the calendar. We realized this was going to be our last episode before Valentine's Day. And therefore, we're going to do a forcening episode. And our theme is love. And if you've never heard one before, this is something that we do from time to time when we go in a circle and each force an episode of TV on one of our colleagues. And that's what we're doing today. And up first, Dave, why don't you tell us what episode you forced Sarah to consume?
No.
Okay.
I went with the word love. As we do, we have a very loose definition of what we do. We're allowed to play with it. So I use the word love. I forced Sarah to watch an episode of Love, Death, Plus Robots on Netflix, which is an anthology show about love, death, and robots, mostly computer-generated, incredibly hit and miss, but when it's good, it can be good, but usually it's kind of middling to poor. But the good episodes are entertaining, and one that I picked for Sarah, because it is Valentine's Day, is Season 1, Episode 18, The Secret War. Sounds romantic already. What's going to happen? Let's find out, Sarah.
Thank you, Dave. I had heard of the show, but never watched it before. As Dave said, it's an anthology show. It's basically, per Wikipedia, a reimagining of David Fincher and Tim Miller's long-in-development reboot of 1981's Heavy Metal. For those of you who are not familiar with that property, this one, Love, Death, and Robots, is like animated Black Mirror, but the episodes are all under 20 minutes, and each one is produced by different cast and crew. The specific episode Dave forced upon me, The Secret War, is like X-Files meets a single-person shooter game, meets the World War II Soviet Army, which is fighting a demon horde in the Siberian mountains. Turns out the horde may have been monkeys pawed as an auxiliary fighting force by a member of the Leninite secret police, but it didn't work out as planned because this shit never does. A lot of shooting and explosions follow. I have a clip, which is pretty representative. You'll see why this is funny. Dave, please play the clip. That last squelchy noise, the juicy beheading that you heard about up top. It soon becomes clear to the squad leader, a dude named Zakharov, who looks like the animated Slavic version of the Spectrum mobile commercials guy, that instead of sealing a nest with explosives, they've actually opened it and unleashed an even bigger horde than they were already fighting. They will have to make a valiant last stand, one that lets Zakharov Jr. escape, and get word to high command to send the bombers. Lots of disgusting visuals, but lots of arresting ones too. That shipwreck in the ice that they're investigating at the beginning of the episode is really sort of horribly beautiful. The downed plane that they're all sheltering in. I could have done without the lone woman in the episode being a naked and gutted human sacrifice whose blood and colon are used to summon the demons, but then we also have to see her perfect tits. Like, show, like, don't do that. Like, give her a
show. You want to summon demons or not?
No!
I actually don't! Look how it turned out! Anyway, that's pretty on brand for heavy metal, if I recall correctly. Anyway, I did definitely want to keep watching this, so this was a pretty good find, pretty merciful forcing. Even if I hadn't liked it, it was 16 minutes, so I was entertained. So, well done.
When the next one came up and it looked like it was Brock Samson holding a kitty in a like roughly hand-drawn style for the next episode, I was like, why didn't you give Sarah the kitty episode? But maybe we'll find out she went ahead and watched it herself anyway.
I did not, actually, because I had to continue watching all the other forcing topics out of loyalty, out of misguided, horrible loyalty.
Well, I didn't know that about the heavy metal part of it, so it makes sense for some of the episodes I watched, but it does really depart from that. So if that was like the starting point, they did sort of broaden their offerings. Like, there's an episode where yogurt evolves and takes over the world. There are dark episodes, like darker than this. There's one that's sort of like a Blade Runner meets overpopulation meets Brazilian death squads, where there's like cops that have to kill children because it's, you know, we're there now apparently because of resource scarcity and stuff. So it gets really dark, and some of the episodes are kind of, this episode is really just a video game to me. Like, when I sent this to you, I thought, I don't know if she'll like it, but it really is people that were raised on video games. And this is like a big video game cutscene. So you'd be playing your game where all you see is like the tip of your gun shooting things in first person. And then after the level's done, you'll be treated to a nice high fidelity, you know, computer from scratch animation. That's sort of what we watch here. It's really just like the plot is, oops, demons. Let's shoot them up a lot.
Yeah.
Now let's bomb them. And now we die.
And then there's like an ironic soundtrack cue as the bombs are falling in slow-mo and the demons are, you know, atomizing.
And that's sort of like what you get when you play or watch a video game, depending on what you're doing with it. And it just for me, it was like weirdly nostalgic, even though like that sort of stuff wasn't like my informative video game years, but there's something about that like harkens back to like the golden age of first person shooters when they were sort of like ascending, like with the Half-Life series and stuff like that. Yeah. So I am surprised you liked it, frankly. I didn't think you would. So
even like not Tekken 2, which was still pretty primitive, and that's the one that I played the most of, but like a later generation Tekken where the rendering is much better. And this is what is like playing in the background of safe mode when you're uploading your customized avatar to put on the kangaroo's body. She says, theoretically, not knowing anything about what this might be like.
This reminded me of Time Crisis. That was another game we used to play a lot at when we would go to arcades.
The first person, literally the first person shooter where you actually have a gun and you walk around on what we call rails, predetermined paths.
Although I guess this is more like the zombie one. What was that one called? That was like Time Crisis, but with...
House of the Dead?
Yes, House of the Dead. But because I thought the animation style,
you had a real bloodlust for those games. You had a real bloodlust for those games. It was kind of fun. Yeah,
I have a real bloodlust.
I enjoyed watching or listening to people like in college. What was the sort of like first person shooter that everyone was playing like early to mid 90s?
Oh, probably it's either Doom or Wolfenstein Doom. 3D. Yeah,
was Doom. And something about like the sound effect of Doom or any first person shooter style game that is like Doom. I am able to assimilate and then like exegesize poetry. Mm-hmm. I find it very soothing. Like, it helps me focus because it was like always on in my boyfriend's room, because his roommate, who's like now some big shot lawyer for Twitter, was just like playing Doom and smoking pot. And
man,
there is a rhythm. There is a rhythm to it. Certainly, if you're just listening to it, there is like a as you open the doors, get to the next room, find a key. Bleep, bleep, bleep. Yeah, like it has a it's sort of like when you walk into a casino and there's a cacophony of sounds that sort of grow into like its own song. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that.
But I thought it looked, other than the human faces, which as always looked bad.
Yeah.
Everything else I thought was really beautifully rendered. Like the landscape is quite lovely.
Mm-hmm. I should have done my research, but I suspect like that whole episode is really close to the what's coming up that you can play. Mm-hmm. So like that sort of like 5 years ago, that was what you got on the cutscene. It was just pre-rendered. Here we go. A lot of video games now, they use the same engine you play with to create the cutscene. So it's a little closer to the gameplay. But like the next generation of hardware and software combined, we're really close to you being able to play in the world with the amount of things moving and the, you know, the fidelity of the characters. We're almost there. Like some of the games I play now on my computer, first person shooters, like the characterizations, like the faces and stuff, the like you can't compare them to Pixar or anything like that, but compared to like Doom or you know, the first generation stuff, you know, when I was just in college or getting out of college, like it's amazing. Like when you shoot people, they like grimace and stuff like that. Like the exponential progress of these things is kind of neat. So like in a year, that video game is going to look worse than some of the video games you can play.
Well, the demons are really like gnarly and scary looking.
Yeah. Well, that's why the lumpier and gooier that things are, where you can't really tell what they are, this the better it is. It's sort of like why, like in Star Wars animations, everybody's wearing arm braces and stuff, so they don't have to like articulate that well, and they don't have to have flowing anything because it's cheaper to animate. It's sort of like that, you know, like gooey appendicized things with like no fingers, just jabby things, or like where you want to go to like shave your budget, I guess.
Or things that are really angular, like we talked about this, I'm sure, on the podcast before regarding Starship Troopers, that one of the reasons that it holds up so well, even though it's 25 years old.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
is that the aliens, they are kind of video gamey themselves. Like it's all hard angles. And so,
yeah. I'm from Buenos Aires. And I say we kill them all.
Yeah.
Good job, Dave.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I am surprised again. I didn't think you would go for it. Sometimes it's hard to judge your appetite for violence sometimes. You're not as predictable as Tara in there, which is like, yay, gooey thing. And that one kill that you were describing is really like, if you imagine a match head after it's burnt enough, it just sort of like bloop, dangles down in itself. That was this poor guy in there. So
yeah. And I mean, the Foley is right there. Like, I would say the only sort of mark off animation wise is like when there's a close-up on a person and they're like, they still don't quite have stubble, like facial hair. They just really are still struggling at this point. I guess it was only a few years ago, but I don't find that particularly bothersome. Like, I'm, you know, Dave's age, I remember Pitfall being like, ooh, like, you know, that's just some cubes and he's pitfalling away, like, it, you know, that was fine.
Yeah.
So anything with joints and like hair is like, woo, like we're still really impressed by that. Or I am. All right. Well, speaking of times have really changed since the early 80s. My Forsening is up next. I was assigned to Forsen Tara. I looked through the whole list of ABC after school specials and CBS school break specials looking for one that had the word love in the title and also starred someone that was, like, we still know their names, but not because they're, you know, Trumpy. This took a while, by the way. A lot of Scott Baio titles were rejected, and I thought I was going to have to just like slink back to some, you know, Bayonix. I did not. I selected It's No Crush, I'm in Love. And I was relieved to find it was only 46 minutes, but I felt everyone in my ass. Tara, would you like to tell us more about this fine mini film?
It is slow. It could have come in at a nice tight 26 and it would have been fine. Because even though we can all acknowledge this is for children or, you know, tweens or teens or whatever, it's not for us. It's not even for us at the time because we would have been maybe probably too young. It came out in 1983. But we can tell right from the start where this is going. So the premise is Cynthia Nixon, a very young Cynthia Nixon. This is her last credit pre-Amadeus. This is only her, the 10th thing that she's, that's on her IMDb. She might have done kid stage stuff before that. I think she was in Annie at some point.
I think she did.
But she's a high school student in Tuckahoe, a real place name.
Don't mind if I do.
Yeah, not just a RuPaul's Drag Race joke location. A real place where she lives is actually shot in Lyndhurst, New Jersey. Like all of these, they make New Jersey towns look so like wholesome and cute. Like every one of these that we've seen, I think was shot in the same place or around here in New Jersey. And they all look very Americana. Anyway, she has a huge crush on this soap star named Zach Whittier. He is daytime's dreamboat, the searching heart's heartthrob, according to a magazine story that she buys very early on. And her best friend, Susanna Siegelbaum, only ever called by her last name in this, is trying to get Anne. She's called Amy on IMDb, but it's Anne, to try to meet boys that she, you know, might actually interact with in the same physical space.
I loved this, that it was like, and Anne's comeback, which is perfectly reasonable, is like, but they're high school boys. And Siegelbaum's like, but we're both right. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Right. And of course, we now know Cynthia Nixon was on her own journey with all of this. Like, maybe boys were not the play, the only play in town in 1983, as we also know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she goes to her English class. There's a new teacher. He's the sub for the rest of the year. His name is Mr. Angelucci, and they like delay showing us his face for a while. But all we do see first that all the girls in class are horned for him. And then when he finally gets to Anne's desk, she looks up at him and he looks exactly like Zach Whittier. yes. So her obsession transfers from the soap star to Mr. Angelucci, and she believes fate has brought him here. She keeps trying to dress in ways that will make her attractive to whatever she thinks he's looking for. He is working on his dissertation, which he was like, the subject of his dissertation is Shakespeare and the semicolon. And I know we're supposed to think that's the most boring thing ever, but I was like, because I'm a fucking nerd. But when, so she volunteers to be his research assistant. And then he's like, this is my topic and I need you to go through this and underline every line that has a semicolon in it. It was like, so you haven't started. Like, this is
what the hell?
Zero. But the other thing that's going on parallel to all of this is that he, Mr. Angelucci, has been encouraging students to join the paper, which is like on its last legs, the Tiger's Roar, just for Sarah. and the editor of this publication is named Robbie Poles. He's played by Todd Graff. And he keeps making overtures, which Anne is completely oblivious to because she's laser focused only on Mr. Angelucci. But over time, she, you know, they strike up a friendship because of the paper. He asks her to homecoming dance, is very like low key about it. But then the crisis comes when the dance, because she accepts thinking they're just friends. It's the same night as Mr. Angelucci wants to take her out and give her something really special. And she thinks he's going to take him to this romantic dinner. There's a lot of cutaways to like her fantasy life about what she thinks things are going to be like, which is sort of cute. They're very much
there's her little sister spying on her and like reporting back to anyone who will listen, like, she was hugging and kissing her winter coat, and I was like, that's hilarious. Exactly what a younger sibling would do.
Yes,
jerks.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so she ditches Robbie, goes to this thing, and ends up just being like a pizza place or something. And he's like, I have something to show you, my love. But she hears, I have something to show you, my love. And what it ends up being is his incredibly fat first draft of a thesis. And then his girlfriend shows up. Oh, no. And so that finally snaps Anne out of her fantasy of what life with Mr. Angelucci might be like, and to realize there's someone right in front of her that has liked her this whole time, and that is Robbie, although she's going to have a hard go of it because he's really into taking her to the old movie house to see fucking Charlie Chaplin shit. Like,
but he also takes her to a pet cemetery. I don't know, like Team Robbie. Todd Graff is adorable in this. He's wearing
really
a sweater vest that has its own congressman. He's so cute.
Yes, so that's a happy resolution. Don't keep your head in the clouds, obsessing on celebrities. Try to relate to people that are actually in your real life is the lesson of this one.
Mm-hmm.
That was cute. It was slow, but she is so winning. I mean, it's clear.
She is
she's
adorable.
A star.
Mm-hmm. She's adorable. She's very convincing as that, like, awkward willfully delusional teenager around the crush object, but then like she obviously is vibing with Robbie, but she's oblivious to that. Like, that's actually kind of hard to act, and we saw it done really badly on 90210 a squillion times.
She's
adorable, and like the 1983 fashions and like the sort of Diane Keaton meets puffer vest
deal.
I mean, Lyndhurst is not far from where I grew up, and the you know, towns could be twins. Like, mm-hmm. Robbie's house looks like houses in my neighborhood that I grew up in. So, yeah, I mean, did we get the point well ahead of when the movie did? Mm-hmm. Yes, we did. But it was 1983. I'll let it go.
Yeah. Dave also watched it.
Yes, I did.
Sorry, Dave.
Yes, I did. And it was very slow. But the part that I was like, that kind of caught me was right at the start that kicks off the whole thing when she buys the magazine. And it's like just one of these like small-ish town. Yeah. So like a news agent kind of place with the magazines that go up the wall taller than any person can reach. Like, that was how much space they had versus how much inventory they had. And I'm just reminded, like, every town that you were in until a certain point where magazines just started to die off because the internet took over, always had one of those. And I'd love going to theirs.
Me
like
too.
St. Catharines had Christopher's downtown.
Yes.
And then like the super bookstores took over and you would go to like, you know, Borders or Chapters in Canada and just like sit in the magazine area for like an hour and a half and just like, you know, browsing it there and then maybe taking one or two home. I kind of miss magazines in a way. Like, if you gave me the choice, magazines or up to the date, up to the minute information, I would choose up to the minute information on stuff because it's much more convenient and fun. But there is something to be said about not only like the tangible stuff of a magazine. I'm not so much into that, but it's more the purchasing experience of magazines that I really miss, that sort of monthly information mecca that was that newsstand or that big bookstore where you go to and it's just like, oh, I didn't know that there was a magazine just for my make of camera now. Like, what a weird thing that somebody put out. But here we are.
Yeah.
And even like way back in the day, it would be like, here's a magazine and it's got a compact disc full of Doom demos and whatnot, you know, that you put in your computer.
Sure.
PC or World. Cassettes.
Back in my hometown does still have a news agent, and this is where my father very loyally goes to buy like 16 copies of something that whatever our book is mentioned in, or like when we were on the front page of the G section of the New York Times, like 20 years ago, oh my God, when they had a G section, and my dad like waddled out of this place with their entire supply of like the Tuesday New York Times, and they're still open.
Yeah.
And there's like the guys who are in there the whole day and they buy one weak cup of coffee and play dominoes. And it smells like that dark soupy ink that they use to print Parade magazine on. That's like super cheap.
Yep.
Yeah. Still there.
I was the same. I mean, we've definitely talked about this on our sister podcast, Listen to Sassy, which is about Sassy Magazine, that I was like a magazine head even then and would spend my allowance on every fashion magazine, like could not go to a convenience store without looking at the rack. Like even at Max or 7-Eleven, there would be like a decent selection of, you know, nationally known magazines, like at the time, Glamour, Mademoiselle, Vogue, like would be sold at these stores. Now you have to, you know, they still sell Vogue at the grocery stores, but, you know, it's definitely a different experience. And I got even more into magazines when I worked at the library.
Yeah, when you go to like a place that has magazines now, especially like a grocery store, like they're not magazines anymore. They're just these like one-off, like intern created specials, like The Life of Indiana Jones by Life Magazine or Time Magazine, 50 pages of shit from Wikipedia, I'm going to assume.
Like Meghan Markle before the tiara.
Yeah.
It really was a different, I mean, as a secondhand book dealer, I also have vintage magazines, and it really, like, when you remember that there were like 15 general interest news magazines that came out twice a week in the middle of the last century, it was really something. Anyway, it's amazing that we're talking about this instead of this after school special, but I mean, I picked it for a reason.
Yeah, we love magazines. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing that I enjoyed was that, I mean, Sarah called out that the little sister acts like a little sister. She really does. And the two of them sort of her and her mother kind of not banding together against Anne, but like having the two of them be a unit trying to understand what Anne's deal is like felt very psychologically real to me. We find out eventually in the Pet Sematary scene that Anne's father passed away suddenly, it seems. Mm.
He was a cat. That's what I
mean. He was a cat.
I miss you, Mr. Dads.
Mr. Cassidy.
So now she buys Cat Fancy magazine every week.
But her friend is also very funny. I don't know why they went out of their way to give us the detail that they don't go to the same school. Like, it doesn't seem to really add to the story. But anyway,
somebody in the writer room said, like, wouldn't the friend have stopped this or would have been saying
or
more?
Like, how are we supposed to get exposition done if they are besties at school?
Yeah. All right, fair. But she's, I mean, her name is Siegelbaum. She is Jewish. And they, like, code her Jewish from second one, where she's talking about, like, just having come back from seeing her grandmother in Miami. And it's that also felt very 1983 to me. But it's like, it's integrated. Look at the diversity. This white girl is Jewish. White. But,
yeah, like, also it's New Jersey. Like, yeah. Cassidy and Siegelbaum. Yep, that's the full range of the New Jersey experience.
We got beige and light tan. Take your pick.
Anyway, I wasn't mad to watch it. It was sweet, and we happened to watch it the same day as the new episode of The Gilded Age. So seeing the contrast between Cynthia Nixon as Anne, with her head in the clouds, daydreaming about the soap star, to Cynthia Nixon as Miss Brooke, head in the clouds about Bill Irwin. Maybe coming to court her.
I mean, he could really dance, Bill Irwin. Come on.
That's true. That's true. It's not to be. All right. So it was my task to assign something to Dave. And
oh, boy.
Truly the first and only title that came into my mind was Tori and Dean, In Love. This was a reality show that you're not going to fucking believe this, you guys. It lasted 6 seasons.
Wow. Oh, my God.
That seems like a lot.
Yeah, it does.
Every moment of fucking eternity.
At a certain point, it stopped being 23 minutes, which was the length of the episode that we watched the series premiere, and it went to an hour format.
Wow.
But yeah, 2007 to 2013. So the premise of this show is Tori Spelling and Dean McDermott are relatively newly married. She is 5 months pregnant at the point where we join up with them. And they have spontaneously decided / been contracted by E! Or wherever this aired to get out of Los Angeles. They're renting their place anyway, because of course they are. We all know about her money problems. There is actually a reference in the opening credits animation to, like, her being disinherited.
Yes, her disinheriting. Wow.
Dis-inherited, as it's spelled. But anyway, this is them starting the process of purchasing a property to run as a bed and breakfast, but like a cool bed and breakfast for Gen Xers or whatever. And that's the premise. Dave, tell us what you thought of this episode.
Well, I don't know why you gave this to me. I mean, obviously, this wasn't out of love for
she
me.
She hates you.
Because, you know, I don't like reality shows, and I certainly don't give two shits about Tori Spelling. And the show is really choppy, like, in every regard. Like, the editing is choppy, mm-hmm. and their use of title cards and stuff just to, like, try to segmentize what is going on in a way that I guess they feel is digestible, but it really just feels like the story editor is doing a very linear edit of it and is just chopping big chunks out of things and trying to marry them with these title cards every once in a while. Like, it doesn't seem like that has the deft hand of a story editor, say, you know, you would find on a Bachelor or Survivor or mm-hmm. even like Property Brothers or something like that. Like, they're all crafted, you know, in a way to have some sort of narrative out of the raw footage. Mm-hmm. And this episode, which admittedly is the pilot, but still, it felt very piecemeal and disjointed. And I kind of got like a little bit of like whiplash from everything that was going on. Mm-hmm. I feel like they needed to like focus on less.
Yeah.
Because in the first episode, it's like, oh, Tori's been, you know, she's got money problems. She's relatively new marriage.
Yeah.
Baby on the way. Crazy, you know, like I felt like if they took maybe just one part of it, it's like where we are in our lives right now. And the first episode ended with the idea that now there's going to be, you know, this project. Mm-hmm. Just seemed like they were doing way too much. They just really wanted to fast forward to the garage sale, which was like, I guess, the big draw of this. Tori Spelling has sort of an estate sale where they just go through all the shit, quote, they don't want anymore, but she obviously doesn't want to get rid of anything, including a trip to like her cold store or her storage somewhere. And Dean, her husband, beats me to the joke, which is, oh my God, this is looks like it's from Raiders of the Lost Ark. At the end, where they drag the Ark of the Covenant into the, you know, the big government warehouse.
Did he say that or did I say that?
Dean says that.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, okay.
he did.
Beat us to the joke.
It was one of the few things he said that didn't make me want to vomit myself inside out and die.
Yeah.
He's the worst.
If you haven't watched it, and I say that, you're thinking, oh, okay, like there's 10 boxes or whatever. No, that's like
no.
There's, you have to go around corners and there's like double stacked
crates,
giant crates, like,
yeah,
you know,
like a library ladder situation.
You think to yourself, you know, in those movies, you know, where they have the wood crates that hold things and they have to nail the lid on, but I never see them in real life. What era is that from? Well, they still use them and they're at Tori Spelling's giant warehouse of prom dresses and stuffed animals she supposedly loved and let go 20 years ago and just is now the most important thing in her life.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and that we heard. I mean, if you listen to our cousin podcast again with them about 90210 OMG, there is a lot here that we are familiar with from Jenny and Tori's podcast, and not in a good way. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more Dean than we've been getting.
Sure is.
And I was fine with the Dean levels, although I would be interested to hear everyone's opinion of the I knocked up Donna Martin ringer tee, which I kind of want. You know, it would make no sense for me to wear it. He is terrible and gross, and they need to stop saying make love.
Oh, my God. Or shag. But, you're Canadian.
Oh, shag. Stop. But the story about the dress she lost her virginity in and mm-hmm. the bloodstain comes back. Like, there's just a lot of things that are still not worked out 15 years later.
Yeah. They're instantly disgusting. Like in the cold open before the credits, you're like, I hate you both. Like,
rained
you should not be together.
Trash.
You're awful.
Awful. Yeah.
But like the storage unit, the reason that they're there is that their financial planner, who, as Dave alluded in his intro, is like, looks like the sketchiest guy that ever lived. He's Dean's financial planner. And he has said, if you want this to work, if you want to do this, you're going to need to sell a bunch of your shit to raise money to buy this property. And so that's the ostensible reason for this estate sale, is that they're going to the storage unit to find stuff that they think they can make a decent amount of money on. And, you know, some of it, it seems from what we see in the footage, like it is people, you know, just fans and gawkers and stuff that are paying a premium because of the connection to Tori Spelling. Mm-hmm. But even when we, like, before we get into anything that we, in the warehouse, mostly all we see is clothes. And she says, I've got all this furniture in there. You know, her taste is shit. Like, you know, there's nothing mm-hmm. in that place that's worth anything. It's all from fucking Z Gallery. It's going to be like cheap, mass produced garbage.
Like, there's right. nothing. Yeah.
Like, there's just nothing that, like, there that's
sort of
worth
Spanish
anything.
Reformation style that they stage all of the houses on Million Dollar Listing LA in.
Yeah.
It's just like, put red tile on it. Done.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Pier 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there is a slightly funny segment in the house when her friends Pier have come 2. Over to help them get ready. And everything, she's like, we can't get rid of that. It was $10,000. And then she's like, no, not that. I paid $10,000 for that hutch. And then they're like, everything is $10,000. And she rolls with it. And that was like a little winning. Like, she has moments where mm-hmm. she seems like she understands, like, who she is and why she is like this and, like, what function she is supposed to serve as a famous person. But mm-hmm. Dean, like, already hates her guts. Like, it's very clear. He can't stand her. And, yeah. you know, I am more team Tori than team Dean, but I don't want to live with her either. Like, she seems like a chore.
Yeah, she's a lot. But, I mean, you know, Jimmy had.
Yeah.
Boyo.
Yeah, no one told you to have five yourself. Children with her. Right. Yeah.
See, it's funny, I guess, because I just sort of, like, put a blinder on celebrity culture in that way. Like, everything that I mentioned was just with the mechanics of the business of the show.
Yeah.
And like, that's not the reason people are watching this show, obviously. It was just like, let's see this train wreck of a relationship, I guess, in the long term, that's what you get, right?
Yeah.
And, but like, for me, I was just like, in what ways can I drain, can I squeeze out like a late 90s, early aughts era TLC show out of this, right? Mm-hmm. Like Trading Spaces or Home and Gardens or whatever it is. Like, there's an element of that, which was like the closest thing to entertaining that I glommed onto. Mm-hmm. And then just like the stuff, like getting a peek into the storage, like how much is he spending just to keep this stuff around? Like, that was a lot of space. That had to be like four figures.
Thousands of dollars a month.
Well, and they should have put her on Storage Wars. Like, every time I see these sort of over manufactured, like all of Dave's complaints about the build of the show, legitimate. Mm-hmm. The staff of the show, like everything about the show is bad.
The bad lighting too. Just like, it's really dark and grainy. Like, they didn't like bring in enough lights just to walk around with and light shit up.
It looks like they were using a, for personal use, like home video.
Yeah, it did.
Camera that's like HD. I don't think so. It's high something. Mm. But yeah, there's just, as usual with Tori, there's like these glimpses of things that should have been, or, you know, could have been and weren't terrible, and then were terrible.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a scene where as they are planning the estate sale, or maybe it's just like, it's sort of like edited to be like almost at the same time, right on top of each other narratively. They're getting some money through this estate sale, and then like she's shopping and buying all this new, like, super expensive baby shit
at Kitson
in order to walk out in front of the paparazzi. Christ. I do have a question. Those paparazzis were E hired, right?
No, I bet they were real.
You think those all the time? Because they seem very.
But they were probably tipped.
Well,
that's how that works.
Yeah, okay. That's what I mean. Like, it was engineered in some way, because just the way that they were always in the right place in the shot, even when like they were coming in and out of something or just going down the street. I don't know. It just seemed like maybe I'm just cynical.
Well, but just to situate you in time, like 2007, like this was when she would have been a mainstay on Us Weekly and Star and stuff. Like, you could make money selling a picture of Tori Spelling. And the other thing about them being at Kitson, they just hang out around Kitson because like a certain level of celebrity would go there, like Paris Hilton or like people at that level would shop there.
I didn't think they weren't paparazzis because I can tell by their camera equipment that was actually real stuff. They weren't like here I am with the, you know, prop camera that's been in, you know, the bucket for 3 years. And it's like a camera, you know, like they had the big $10,000 lenses on it that you can shoot across town with and all that.
Yeah.
But it just seemed like, yeah, I think Sarah's right that they were just basically like, we're doing this show. Tori's going to be here, you know, making an ass of herself, buying stuff she doesn't really have the money for.
Yes.
So come on and get some shots and we'll film you shooting.
Yeah. And I also think like when they go for their ultrasound, that's probably another place where paparazzi hang out, because there's probably one or two doctor's offices where all of the, not the Tory's A-list, but anyone who can afford it goes to a certain, you know, caliber of place. And so they just loiter out there trying to catch someone.
Yeah. The kind that's not, that doesn't have an underground like garage entrance where.
Or like some people choose not to use it because they're Tory Spelling and they would rather be on the cover of Us Weekly being like her private pain than not be on a magazine at all.
And they probably called when calling yourself Terry Spalling and was like,
she immediately calls her ultrasound spawn Satan. So, you know, it was a good start to that relationship. Well, I don't know which kid that was, but, you know, that kid's going to see it sometime.
The oldest one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So,
did not really care for it. Don't want to watch anymore. I don't understand the appeal of this type of show. I will say I was sort of just bewildered and entertained with my bewilderment at the size of the storage area. Mm-hmm. And just like, I mean, everybody's got their issues, right? But there's some sort of horde-esque thing going on there. Like it didn't present in the cleanliness of where she lived, but she was sort of like offloading her hoarding tendencies to, you know, Bric-a-Brac Limited somewhere where they were like just storing it for. But like she's going through stuff. And like I said, like apparently Mr. Wiggles or whatever the fuck that stuffed doll was like the most important thing from her childhood. And she was devastated that anybody would think that she would ever want to get rid of it. It's been in storage for a decade at least.
Yes, exactly.
And it's just sort of, it's those moments where it's obviously just manufactured for the camera, you know, like the only thing she didn't do is like one single tear as she talked about it, that I hate this type of show for.
Yeah. Well, I wish I could tell you you can stream it, but you can't. I purchased it on eBay on the DVD set, and it came from a Goodwill in, I want to say, Missouri was the was the seller, and I think I paid $7 for it. So you can find it. If you wish.
It tries to warn you itself, too, because when you put the DVD in your DVD player and the menu screen comes up and it looks like it was done on a fucking Commodore 64.
Yeah.
Like the things that say episode one, episode two are all janky and like they don't look like.
Fall Guy is back and he's like, don't do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. I cost $10,000.
All right, let me tell you what's coming up in the Extra Hot Great universe on the next Extra, Extra Hot Great. It is Less Watch, the most infamous episode of One Tree Hill. Yes, that one. And then on the next EHG Prime, that is next week, it is an all-canon episode. Three canon episodes presented by you, our listeners, chosen by us, your hosts. And we'll go through them one by one and give them a talk through. Check that out next week.
Speaking of threesomes, do you know what time it is?
It's game time, perhaps?
It is not regulation game time! Welcome to a non-regulation game time written by me, Buncey, or as befits our subject matter today, Butsy. This is called Channel 69, and there's not much to it.
Okay.
Okay.
I will describe a television show that has been reimagined as a porn title. You have to guess the new porny title correctly. Okay. If you do it in one shot, it's worth 2 points. If you need a hint, I will give you the year in and network on which the real show debuted. After that, it is worth 1 point. No penalty for guessing incorrectly before the hint, so have at it.
Okay.
I do have specific answers in mind for each show, but I will give you some latitude with the construction of your answers. So let's do a test. For instance, if I tell you that this vintage Mark Goodson, Bill Todman game show tasked contestants to complete masturbation challenges while faced with a time limit, you might guess.
Beat the meat.
We will accept beat the meat.
It's beat the clock, right?
But It is Beat the Clock.
Oh, Beat the
Cock. I had Beat,
oh, beat the
Cock.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
But
of course.
Beat the Meat will be accepted.
Oh,
I don't even know
okay.
what that show is. I'm going to do terrible at this.
As well, that was actually an old Fairly Hard one. I think you'll be fine.
Fairly Hard.
So got some stiff competition going.
As well, if you come up with an answer I didn't think of that is technically correct, I will award full credit.
All right.
11 questions each, plus a tiebreaker if necessary. Would you like to know what you are playing for?
Yes.
The winner may force me to watch and report on the Red Shoe Diaries episode of his or her choice in and around the dial segment. History's Greatest Acting Robot was in more than one of these, I'm pretty sure. So,
he was the narrator, wasn't
he? Yeah, he's in all of them.
Yeah.
Oh, he was the narrator?
Yeah, he's the connective stuff at the start.
Yeah, don't say
stuff.
It's complicated.
All right. Yes, several seasons of this are available on Tubi. Be gentle. Could picky. Please let us know who is starting us off.
We will start with Tara.
All right, Tara. Tara, would you mind keeping score as well?
I would not mind.
Question number one. In April 1986, an explosion at a power plant causes elephantiasis of the testicles throughout the USSR.
Talk it through.
Read it again if you want.
Yeah.
In April of 1986, an explosion at a power plant causes elephantiasis of the testicles throughout the USSR.
I mean, the only thing I can think is, I mean, it's not The Day After. It's not V. I don't know what the show is, so I don't know what the porn title is.
Okay. Would you like the hint?
Sure.
This premiered on HBO in 2019.
Oh. Chernobyl?
I was going for Chernobyls, but I will give you the point.
Okay.
All right, to Dave.
I'm so bad at this game. Okay, let's go. Do it.
Based on a graphic novel, this show is This show is set in an alternate history where masked vigilantes are also peeping toms.
I have a guess.
I'm just trying to figure
no
out.
No penalty for guessing, so if you want to talk it through, you
okay,
can.
Okay, so masked vigilantes are peeping toms. Alternate universe part, though, is kind of throwing me.
There is a hint available to you.
Yeah, I think I know what the show is, but just in case I'm way off, but I can't figure out. I'm really having trouble with the pornification of these so far. So give me the clue, please, Sarah.
Okay, this premiered again on HBO, again in 2019.
Oh, okay. So, Peeping Toms.
What do you think the show is?
Well, I think it's Watchmen, but they're peeping toms. So I don't know. Is it Watch Women?
We were looking for I Like to Watch Men.
That's what I thought.
Okay. All right. I see where you're there. Okay. All right. Fine.
Okay. Back to Tara.
Yep.
Couple of different answers for this one. So guess away.
Okay.
The crew of an aging spaceship must protect the backsides of humanity on its journey to the 13th colony.
Okay. Well, I think that's Battlestar Galactica. Battlestar Galactica.
That was her first two-pointer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Back to Dave. I feel good about your chances.
Okay. Great.
Set in a dystopian future, a woman is forced to live as a concubine in a theocratic dictatorship and to make her own lubricant.
Can you read the first part of that? I didn't catch that first.
Set in a dystopian future.
Dystopian. Okay.
A woman is forced to live as a concubine in a theocratic dictatorship.
Okay.
And to make her own lubricant.
Is this the hand job's tale?
Yes, it is. 2 points.
Meh.
Back to Tara. Couple different answers for this one as well.
Wait, hang on. Under his one eye.
Ooh, okay. Sarah point. All right. Question five. Mm-hmm. Maybe this police corruption drama wouldn't still be mocked as turgid prestige navel gazing if it had added oral sex to the mix.
There's too many options for the cop show, so I need a hint.
This premiered on AMC in 2013.
Okay.
Police corruption drama.
Yep.
Still mocked today.
If
wouldn't be mocked today if it had added oral sex to the mix.
Blow Winter Sun.
Blow Winter Sun is correct. We also would have accepted Fellatio Winter Sun. I might be the proudest of this one, but it's pretty hard. Dave, pretty hard.
All right.
This miniseries about a middle school math teacher, her marriage, and her preference in condoms won an Emmy for Frances McDormand, among others.
I have no idea what that is. So a miniseries about a teacher.
Oh, he's never heard of this.
I don't know what this is.
Okay, so HBO 2014 does not,
not gonna
help you?
No.
Okay, Tara, any guesses?
Well, it's Olive Kittredge.
Olive Kittredged for her pleasure.
Oh,
that's
sure,
the one.
Sure.
That's the one.
Yeah.
All right, back to Tara.
Yep.
I will tell you that this show is about crab fishermen. I'll also tell you their boat is called the Vagina Dentata.
Okay. The Deadliest Snatch.
That's correct. 2 points.
Hmm.
Going to hell for this one. And all the other ones, but mostly for this one. Dave, this animated series features cherries and clams retelling stories from the Bible or the Kama Sutra, one of those. Animated series featuring cherries and clams retelling stories from the Bible.
So you know the real thing about produce that tells Bible stories.
You broke my brain. Oh, no.
There is a real thing.
I know. I'm thinking.
Okay. Okay.
You got to read that again because my brain.
Okay.
Yeah.
This animated series features cherries and clams retelling stories from the Bible or the Kama Sutra. One of those. What animated series do you know of?
I guess it's Veggie Tales, but I can't place it. Mm-hmm. I can't do it.
Cherries and clams.
No, I can't do it.
Tara.
It's VeggieTales.
It is VeggieTales. I'm sorry to tell you.
Jeez.
I'm not that sorry. Back to Tara. I'm glad you got this one. Before they created Friends, Marta Kaufman and David Crane made this premium cable sitcom about a divorced book editor's nocturnal emissions.
Cream On.
Oh, I was going for Wet Dream On, but we will accept Cream On.
Okay.
Dave. A comedy series following the exploits of a detective and his colleagues in NYC's most populous borough as they try to give and receive oral sex at the same time.
I have to read that again.
Poor Dave. A comedy series following the exploits of a detective and his colleagues in NYC's most populous borough as they try to give and receive oral sex at the same time.
All right. I just assumed Manhattan was the most popular. I guess it's got to be Brooklyn 6ix9ine.
Yes, it does. It does. And it is.
Okay. My theory is that Dave is doing bad at this game because he wants to still try and get into heaven, unlike me and Sarah.
Yeah, we've long since given up. All right. Speaking of Satan, back to Tara.
Yep.
After being struck by lightning, the hero of this show wakes up with the power of super speed. So when he exposes himself to strangers, they may not even notice.
The Flasher.
The Flasher is correct. Oh, Dave, I don't feel great about your chances, but I think it's actually this one that I'm proudest of.
You love all your babies equally.
This anime show follows the futuristic misadventures and tragedies of an easygoing bounty hunter and his partners, all of whom are on top and facing away from him. This anime show, easygoing bounty hunter, his partners, all of whom are on top and facing away from him.
Okay.
I Do you know any animation?
Is this reverse Cowboy Bebop?
It's reverse Cowgirl Bebop, oh, cowgirl. But we will accept that answer. Yeah,
right. Let's not be heteronormative here.
Okay. Back to Tara.
Yep.
This reality series started with half-hour episodes, then expanded, to an hour when the network realized just how many misbehaving penises needed advice from a trainer.
From a trainer. Hint.
This series premiered on National Geographic in 2004.
Oh. The doggy whisperer. Doggy-style whisperer.
We will accept that, or the dick whisperer.
Okay.
Good for one.
Okay.
All right, back to Dave, then we'll have a score break. Known for breaking the fourth wall, this British dramedy made pretty much every best of list both years it was on, and won several Golden Globes for best ensemble swallowing of a scrotum. You know, for kids. I hope no one's listening to this in carpool. Forget hell. I'm going to jail.
You have to read that again because my brain just emptied out of hope for everything.
Known for breaking the fourth wall, this British dramedy made pretty much every best of list both years it was on and won several Golden Globes for best ensemble swallowing of a scrotum. Work the problem, Cole.
I just don't know what your stupid names for things are with your sex parties and your whatnot.
Dave's an innocent little boy who wants to go to heaven.
I mean, I guess it's The Office. But I don't know how that would work.
It is not The Office. Would you like the hint?
Oh.
Sure.
It premiered on the BBC in 2016.
That doesn't help me. No, don't got it.
No,
me neither.
Nothing? No. Tara, no thoughts? Okay, no. The original show that we were looking for was Fleabag.
Oh.
The pornified show is
Teabag.
Teabag. Could we get a score break, please?
Yeah, can we get a score break?
Sure. Dave has 6 points. I have 11.
Okay, I was hoping one of you would have six and one of you would have nine, but you can't.
I played my part.
All right, thank you very much. Still some game left. Dave, you could bring this back around. Unfortunately, in our next question, I will have to sing. Tara, are you prepared?
Mm-hmm.
Who lives in no underwear under the sea? Absorbent and yellow and drawersless is he.
SpongeBob, no pants.
SpongeBob, no pants. SpongeBob, 2 points. Dave. Two FBI agents are detailed to investigations of pornographic phenomena. They both want to believe the show is not for children.
Okay, well, no, I'm just trying to figure out what the actual answer you want is. So,
there's a couple that are possible.
Well, it sounds like the X-rated or the XXX files. I'm not sure which one you want.
The I'm rated go with X or X-rated files. Okay. Any of those is fine. You're on the right track. 2 points.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you. Tara.
Yep.
A sitcom set at a Catholic school during the end of the Troubles. The main characters navigate their teen years and a lot of butt stuff.
Derriere Girls.
The Derriere Girls is correct.
That's a good one. That's good, nice, clean porn fun. The whole family can enjoy.
Not sure how you'll feel about this, this satanic show, Dave.
Little Irish cream for your coffee.
No.
I'm trying to get into the spirit of things.
Hey,
who's trying so hard, game? Guys? I just can't.
All right. Respect for the effort.
In which the benefits of recreational marijuana are delivered straight to the perineum. You're shaking your head, but I think the hint might actually help you.
I know what show it is. I just can't figure out what the fuck you want out of it. I don't know what you want out of me. I don't know what you want out of me.
That could be a line on any of these shows.
No, I don't have it. I can't do it. It's high maintenance, but I can't connect it.
Tara?
Perineum? It's high maintenance.
High maintenance. Yes, okay. It is.
That makes sense, I guess.
All right, moving on. Dave is angered at the.
No, I'm not angry. I'm lost in the wilderness, guys. That's what I am right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're a PG-13 man in an X-rated world.
It's true.
We're almost done.
Dave uses a different internet from the rest of us, as we have said many times.
Not the dark web. Okay. No. Tara.
Yep.
Inspired by Laguna Beach, this Florida-set reality show follows a group of young adults confronting issues of love, heartbreak, and partner swapping at cocktail soirees.
Oh. Well, I thought it was Floribama Shore, but that doesn't lend itself. Hint.
This premiered on MTV in 2017.
No, I still don't know. Pass.
Siesta Key Party is what we were looking for.
Siesta
Key Party. That was a tough one.
Right.
Dave.
Yes.
Old Man, Big Hoss, Chumley, and others haggle over prices of and give historical background on phalluses brought in by cash-poor customers.
Oh, what the fuck? All right, there's a lot going on.
We're knocking your rating down to a PG.
Okay.
You could do this.
Let's hear it again.
Old Man, Big Hoss, Chumley, and others haggle over prices of and give historical background on phalluses brought in by cash poor customers.
All right. I just want to let you know at first, because I heard Chumley or something, I was trying to figure out how the good fight got into
Yep. Chum Hummer, gotcha.
Is this Bonanza? Bonanza?
I love your spirit, but it is not. There is a hint still available. Do you think it would help?
Sure, yeah, okay.
It debuted on the History Channel in
2009. Oh. Okay, read it again now that I know that.
Okay. Old Man, Big Hoss, Chumley, and others haggle over prices of and give historical background on phalluses brought in by cash-poor customers.
Yeah.
Where might that happen?
No, I'm trying to... Again, I know the TV part, but I can't figure out what you want out of me. One more time. Read it one more time. I'm so sorry, listeners, but I knew one more time.
Old Man, Big Hoss, Chumley, and others haggle over prices of and give historical background on phalluses brought in by cash poor customers.
Yeah, I think I have the show, but I don't know what
I don't know what it's Pawn Shop, but I don't know, or Pawn Stars, but I don't know, or whatever that is, but I don't know the name. I don't know what you want.
Peen Stars is what we were looking for.
I don't know about that one.
Stars.
I don't know about that one. Write in, let us know.
You're sure you really not gonna know about the next one. Yeah. All right. Everybody has one question left. Tara.
I can only give you half a point for that one, sir. That's the best I can do.
I see what he's doing. Dave has 8 points. I have 15 points.
Okay.
It's anybody's game.
Anybody's game.
Okay. So let's proceed. This is some of the worst work I've ever done. And I'm just going to fire myself. But first, everyone's last question.
But Tara. First. Yes.
But first. Mm-hmm. Especially in this one, three aging entertainment industry veterans from Los Angeles move to a smaller city in Ohio, which is less shallow and youth-obsessed, but much more interested in pooping on their boobs.
Oh.
Hot in Cleveland steamer.
Sure is.
I mean, I just can't feel good about that, but there they are, those points.
We miss her.
I can't feel good about it either, but I also had to.
That's what really killed Betty White. Is this the exciting climax of our game?
Yes, it is.
All right.
The most expensive nature documentary ever commissioned by its network. Each episode of this series featured an overview of a different phallic biome, measuring each one by circumference.
Oh, Planet Girth?
Yeah!
Planet Girth!
Finishing
well
strong!
Well done, Dave. Well done, Dave. Should we play the tiebreaker just for funsies?
Yep.
All right. I'm not even going to do it. I'm just going to read the clue. Set in Massachusetts, David E. Kelly's ensemble drama explored a fictional high school's sex ed curriculum.
Boston Pubic.
That's the one! Zero point.
Wow.
Well, our final scores are Dave with 10 points. I finished with 17 plus the tiebreaker.
I am going to edit this and I'm going to email directly to your parents this game time. And that's what you get for winning.
Good luck.
Tara.
Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We found out love is in the airwaves, and Tara was the winner of this week's game tie from Sarah. Next up, winner. It's dogs eating hearts on Extra Extra Hot Great. And on the next EHG Prime, cannons aplenty. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cock. And on behalf of Tara Area, on behalf of Tara Areola.
Oh, peen.
And Sarah
Dawn.
Decunting. It's right there.
Wow.
Cunting. Just say it.
Tara. Hang on. Where'd it go? No, it's gone. I was trying to find the dick clip. It was gone.
Oh, no. They'll fix that in post.
Dick.
We're listening.
And Sarah
Dick.
Whatever.
Nice.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot. Oh boy, I gotta do a lot of editing on this. Extra Hot. Great.
The dress I lost my virginity in and it had a blood stain. It was sentimental.
Yeah, yeah. Don't want to hear it anymore.
Okay.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 393 for the week of February 7th. I had this moment. I was like, why is it 7th? This is a Valentine's episode. And then my brain just shut down.
Then it shut down.
Yeah, then it shut down. This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 393 for the week of September.
Wow.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
One of four. This is where we are.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. Nah. Hmm. Mm-hmm. Jeez. Jesus Christ. You have to read that again because my brain just emptied out of hope for everything. I don't know what you want out of me. I don't know about that one. Oh. Oh God. That's what really killed Betty White.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ever notice your dog slowing down and having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Rough Greens to your dog's food for 90 days and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Rough Greens here, and I invite you to give your pup the Rough Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your dog will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch your dog a free Jumpstart trial bag today. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. That's TRYRUFF. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your dog's food to improve your dog's health. Just add a scoop of Rough Greens. Discover the life-changing benefits of Meow Greens for your cat. Ever see your cat slowing down or having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Meow Greens to your cat's food for 90 days, and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, I'm naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Meow Greens, and I invite you to take the Meow Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your cat will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, they're going to have better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch a free Jumpstart trial bag for your cat today. Go to trymeowgreens.com. Use promo code TRYMEOW. That's try M-E-O-W. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your cat's food to improve your cat's health. Just add a packet of Meow Greens.